At 6:15, glad to be with you. In for Tommy Tucker, another day of extreme heat with watches and warnings from the Gulf Coast almost to Canada and from the central U.S. to the East Coast as crazy heat will once again have much of the nation in its grip. And we're seeing many, many people end up in the emergency room with heat-related illnesses. Please take it seriously, folks. Heat-related deaths have been skyrocketing. So I know you hear it over and over again, but so many people say it feels hotter than it's ever felt before. And we were 1 degree away from a record yesterday, and that heat index got up to 115, and that is dangerous. President Trump is on a European trip. Today he'll be dedicating a golf course in his mother's memory in the UK. Yesterday he met with the British Prime Minister. He met with leaders of the European Union. He's been negotiating trade deals with the EU. And I was curious to find out, we've heard so much about how Canadians are not happy with the United States and not happy with President Trump. How do the British feel? How do the Europeans feel about America these days? So Thomas Oatley, he's the chair of international relations at Tulane University, was nice enough to join us. Professor Oatley, thank you for being here on WWL.
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me.
So how does Europe feel about the United States these days, and particularly the British? How are they feeling about America?
I think the best word to characterize the feeling is ambivalent. I think that Europe in general, and the UK in particular, especially post-Brexit, remain very dependent on the US, especially for security, military security in particular. And in this kind of world in which Russia has shown itself willing to use military force on the continent, Europe's need for the American security umbrella is stronger than ever, perhaps, at least stronger than it has been since 1990. And the Trump administration seems reluctant to play America's traditional role, traditional post-war role. And I think that makes Europe very insecure and uncertain about how to manage and deal with Trump.
Did you see any of the interactions between the president and the prime minister or the president and the leader of the EU in their news conferences? There did seem to be a little tension, although everyone was forcing a smile. At least that's the way I perceived it. What did you see?
You know, I think that's right. I think that I did not get a chance to see his meeting with the UK Prime Minister. I did pay quite a bit of attention to the meeting with President of the EU Commission. And my sense there was that the EU in general is very, very much trying to make the best of a bad situation. The trade deal they made is not the trade deal they wished to make, but I think it's their determination that it's the best they could get. Without risking a big trade war with repercussions that for this administration would be difficult to anticipate. And so I think, yeah, there's a lot of tension and uncertainty about Trump as president and what he portends for the future of U.S.-European, U.S.-British relationships.
Yeah, and I really got that same kind of feeling yesterday during the news conference with the British Prime Minister, that it was like everyone was there because they had to be there. You know, you ever go to like some formal function that you don't really want to go to, but you go anyway, so you put on a smile, and everyone can kind of tell that you don't really feel comfortable there. And that's the way I kind of perceived it. But it seems like everyone at least is playing nice and getting along at this point.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think that everyone is a bit unhappy to be in this relationship. But this is the relationship that structurally everyone finds themselves within and are unable to easily afford to step out of. And so I do think that trying to make the best of a bad situation is perhaps the best way to characterize the current state of the world. I think that showed up this past weekend, yesterday, and Sunday in particular.
Yeah, and they absolutely need us for not only their military security, but also for their economic security. The U.S., the biggest trade partner. So, yeah, they don't love the deal, but they love the fact that it's not worse, and they see what's happening to other countries who don't play nice with President Trump and what kind of trade deals they end up with or not end up with at all. So, all right, when we come back, I want to ask Professor Oatley about the general relationship between the U.S. and the U.K. You know, I find it very interesting that in other parts of the world, people never forget how much they hate other countries they've been at war with, and some have been at war for literally thousands of years. It wasn't that long ago historically that the U.S. declared its independence from the British. But now it's like, all right, they forgave that and we're best friends again. So we'll talk about that after we check on WWL traffic. We're talking with Tulane Professor Thomas Oatley about the president's current trip to Europe, which he's mixing some personal business with international relations and the business of the United States, and talking about how we get along with Europe these days. I find it fascinating, Professor, that you look back at world history and you see like the Middle East, where countries have hated each other for literally thousands and thousands of years. They may change the name of the countries, borders may shift around, but the people there still vehemently hate each other. China and Vietnam have hated each other going back before the Common Era, before Christ. Greece and Italy, India and Pakistan, these are just hatred that is deep-rooted and taught from one generation to the next, and they never let go of it. America will be 250 years old next year, and the British and the Americans are like best friends now. The Second World War ended, what, just 70-some-odd years ago, and Germany is one of America's top allies. Why is it that America and its enemies quickly get over it and become friends, while that doesn't seem to happen in many other global spots?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, isn't it? And I think the tradition on the U.S. side is long, goes back all the way to the beginning. I think Washington's farewell address, George Washington, that is, as he left the White House, wrote that in our foreign policy, we should have neither permanent friends nor permanent enemies. And I think that is a principle that has shaped our foreign policy ever since. And in the particular case of the British, I think there's a strong cultural affinity. We're both large English-speaking powers. We both have traditions of essentially trying to remake the world in our vision. And to some extent, that makes us adversaries, but also unites us in a common purpose historically. We're also kind of ideologically similar. Both believe strongly in markets and principles of liberal democracy, individualism. And I think at the end of the day, those cultural and ideological commonalities override the day-to-day differences that might occur in any relationship and contribute to creating this very strong bond that has held us together over the past 150 years or so. That would be my take. And I think Germany is a little different because I think there it's more a marriage of convenience, where the recognition of Germany's importance to European security has been a critical factor in the reconstruction of our relationship with them post-World War II.
Yeah, and maybe more interestingly, that these countries don't hate America the way other countries hate those that have defeated them in war or seen similar kind of conflicts. I mean, we essentially, the United States, you know,
right,
declared independence from the British and took a very valuable colonial setup away from the United Kingdom. And the Germans, twice, the United States was the key factor in defeating them in war, in world wars. But yet they somehow find a way, maybe out of necessity, because if you're not friends with the largest world power, the economic engine for the globe in America, then your nation suffers. But on many levels, I'm kind of impressed by the fact that both sides have found ways to get along.
Yeah, no, I think that is a very impressive achievement. And from an American perspective, or maybe better, from a European perspective, I think a European and an American hegemony has been more helpful than kind of a traditional imperial model, like the Soviets' approach to Eastern and Central Europe after World War II was very authoritarian and oppressive, whereas the American approach to Europe was much more encouraging of reconstruction and liberty, I guess, for lack of a better word. And so those kinds of policies, I think, have gone a long way to helping rebuild relationships in this post-war era.
Yeah, wouldn't it be nice if Eastern Europe, the Middle East, and much of Asia could give up the hate the way that the Western world has, and maybe the world would be a far less violent and hate-filled place. Thank you, Professor. I appreciate you joining us here on WWL.
Thank you very much.
And Ian Ozan tells me you're a trivia star, so good to know that. Thank you, Professor. I'm Dave Cohen. Ian Ozan's up next with the news, and then we're talking about what is going on in real estate. More and more home deals are falling apart after both sides seem to agree that they want to sell and or buy a house. We'll find out why coming up. Dave Cohen in for Tommy Tucker at 6:45 on your Tuesday morning. A new national report finds that in June, some 15% of home sales fell apart, which is the highest share in 7 years. This is after both sides seemed to agree that they wanted to do a sale and a purchase. They're saying that people are not being able to agree on the finer details of the terms when it gets down to negotiations and something derails it. Delisting surged 47% year over year, with buyers stretched thin, pushing back over costs like repairs, sellers, many sitting on low mortgage rates, and big equity not budging. I want to find out, is this something we're seeing locally as well, where the negotiations are more difficult, perhaps, than they've been in a long time? Arthur Sterbko is a local real estate expert and analyst and joins us. Morning, Arthur.
Good morning.
Are you finding this locally, that the negotiation process is getting more adversarial, perhaps, than it was in the past? And like we're seeing across the country, kind of the highest rate in nearly a decade of deals falling apart?
Yeah, it's we've always had about a 5 to 10% fall through rate just because of the buyer found something that he didn't like with the home, or the seller wasn't willing to repair it, or they couldn't negotiate a final resolution to the problem. But it's certainly increased now, and of course the reason is because people just don't have the discretionary income on the seller side or the buyer side to make those discovered repairs. So where normally someone might have some extra money that in reserves that they could use in case there was a minor problem with the roof, you know, some shingles need to be replaced, or some other cosmetic thing that the buyer found objectionable, they wanted the seller to do it. The seller said, hey, I'm strapped. Inflation's got me to the wall. I just don't have it. Added to that, we've got a little bigger problem than the rest of the country, because we've also got the insurance problems in our part of the country. So those factors have increased our fall-through rate, but not to the 15% level that that they're reporting in that particular article. We're probably around 8 to 12%. Depending, now, in the lower price ranges, yeah, you can certainly get into that 15% range, because many times the lower price range homes in some areas, maybe they just haven't been maintained as much. And home inspections now are almost an a requirement when buying a home in today's world, just for litigation and just for safety purposes a lot of times. So
yeah, I thought it was kind of crazy in that pandemic era when people were buying homes sight unseen and waiving inspections, not even knowing what was wrong with the house because the market was so competitive. That was kind of wild. I have been blessed to have been involved in the sale or purchase of 5 homes now. And it seems to me part of the game is, and I use the word game loosely because I know there's serious real money involved here for everybody, but part of the process is maybe a better word, that the buyer and the seller know that after the inspection, the buyer is going to come back asking for the seller to either give them some money or repair something. And because never is a home inspector going to come back and say, everything's perfect, there's nothing to be repaired, because then it's like they're not doing their job. So I'm kind of surprised by this, because I thought that was just part of the negotiation process, and the seller should be expected to have to give something to the buyer when they find something in the inspection.
Well, that can be true, and of course, kind of goes both ways. Sometimes the seller says, look, I've priced it at a price. I know it needs some repairs, and I'm selling it as is, where is. And sometimes the property does need very obvious repairs or renovations, and that's why it's being sold in that condition. It's got a 25-year roof, 25-year-old roof, and you can see it needs to be replaced. I don't have the money to replace it, so I'm selling it just the way that it is. And if your lender wants the roof repaired, Mr. Buyer, you do it. But I'm selling it to you, adjusting the sales price to cover it. So those negotiations, many times with a realtor involved, are covered when they put the property on the market. They've discounted the property to cover those repairs. It's the unknown, the unseen repairs, most times unknown by the seller, that's disturbing the seller. Wait a minute, I've been here all these years. I didn't know that we had aluminum wiring in the house. Nothing's burned down while I've been down here. What's the problem with it? And then you've got an education problem to the seller because, well, now you understand that now that that's a known defect, no one's going to buy that thing until it's repaired. That's end of story. So let's move on, unless you seriously discount the home. So that discovery mode in the seller's mind is many times what causes them to reevaluate negotiating.
Yeah,
but if he doesn't have the money to do it, you know, we've got
so,
a problem.
So that's a question of strategy. Do you price the home low enough to attract enough buyers that you can get someone who would be willing to make those repairs themselves, or do you price it at a point where you know you're going to have to come down to cover some repairs? That's a discussion for you and your realtor. When we come back, and by the way, under slab plumbing has been my nemesis when we get to that inspection process. So there is that. When we come back, I want to talk about other factors. How long are houses staying on the market now in Greater New Orleans? And how is the insurance, record high, highest in the nation insurance, impacting the real estate market here? If you have a question for Arthur Sterbko, text me or call me now on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line at 504-260-1870 while we look at the state of the local real estate market here in Southeast Louisiana. After this check on WWL Traffic. And with local real estate expert Arthur Sterbko. Arthur, how long are homes staying on the market around here these days?
Well, right now we're probably around 62 days on the market from the time that the property goes on the market. But let me be clear, that's the homes that sell. So there are a lot of homes that go on the market. They're still on the market. They've been on the market for a year. But of the homes that sell, that are priced right, that their buyers in the market looking for them, average 62 days. So if you price it right, put it on the market, there are buyers in the market. But contrast that, Dave. You go back to 2021 when the interest rates were so low, it wasn't even 20 days. It was, you know, with 10, 12 offers on a house the day it went up for sale. So those interest rates of 2.75% versus 6.75% today have had just a chilling effect on the rate of home sales.
Yeah, a lot easier when you're playing with house money, and now it's real money people are having to spend if they want to get in the game.
And the insurance wasn't anywhere near what it was, you know, back in 2021. So there was just a huge avalanche of positive factors in home sales back then. Just in terms of the number of sales that took place back then was remarkable. In the month of June of 2021, there were almost 2,000 home sales in that one month in Greater New Orleans, 2,000. And if you say, well, how many this past June? 1,200. 2,000
wow.
Down to 1,200.
That's
so you can see the dramatic
difference.
Significant.
Yeah, and you kind of led me into my next question about how are the highest in the nation insurance rates impacting sales activity? And clearly, when you incorporate the interest rates, which are dramatically higher now, and the insurance costs, which are dramatically higher, we end up with fewer sales because fewer people can't afford to buy a house.
That's correct. But I will say this, on the positive side, there's been a pretty dramatic uptick in home sales, really, since January. It's been fairly dramatic.
To what do you credit that?
I just think there's just more consumer confidence. There's this feeling that interest rates are going to come down, that the inflation rate settled down, actually fell down a bit. So that fear that, oh, my gosh, you know, my grocery bill is, you know, $500 when I go to the store now. Next month it's going to be $800 at this current rate of inflation. We better stand still and not think about selling. Well, it didn't just stay at 500. It went down to about 480, 470. So that in many of the grocery commodities. So people are feeling like we hit the zenith of inflation, and now it's something we can live with. And it's quite possible we're seeing some increase in economic growth as well. So the market has clearly turned a page, and now we need these interest rates to come down to get things more settled out, not just in the country, but certainly here.
Maybe, just maybe, now that we're getting the uncertainty out of the whole tariff conversation, and we've got Japan and the EU finally under trade deals with the United States, maybe we'll see those interest rates start to come down now that there's some clarity about what's going to be happening with tariffs, if we can get a couple of those other major trade deals out of the way. I also mentioned earlier that we're seeing a surge in delistings across the country where sellers are just throwing their hands up and going, forget it, I'm not going to get what I want, so I'm not going to sell. Are you seeing a surge of that here in Greater New Orleans as well?
Not really. Not like I'm seeing in other parts of the country where the prices are just so high. Especially in California, in some areas of the Northeast, that is a common thread, that there's no buyers that feel comfortable buying, either because of economics or whatever. But in any market, David, it always comes down to two words: consumer confidence. Do they feel good about their station in life, where they are, about their location? Can I move up? Can I afford to move up? If I can't, gosh, I'll take this house off the market and just stay where I am. Some sellers were just used to incredible appreciation in those markets and expecting that, the prices are going to be where they were a few years ago. Well, in some of those high-priced markets, the prices in the upper price range have fallen dramatically. So the house isn't worth, $9 million anymore. It's worth $7 million.
So you're going to take a loss on the sale, and that's what nobody wanted to do. Yeah. Arthur, right, we've run out of time, but I want to thank you for joining us. I know we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks for sharing the local real estate picture with us. When we come back, we're going to talk about LSU reporting to football camp today here on WWL. I've been blessed with a great agent. That's very important, too.